Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is a great pleasure to welcome Nilu Tabrizi, the author, the co-author of a new book, For the Sun After Long Nights. Subtitle tells the story of Iran's women-led uprising in these last years. The co-author is Fatemeh Jamalpour, who is represented in this book with the Audible I recommend highly. Both Nilu and Fatima have read alternatively chapters from their long-distance correspondence on social media, but also from looking at same events and different events over these 3 years. Nilu, congratulations and good evening. And we begin with a tragedy. Mehsa Jina Amanu died in September of 2022 at the hands of the police. That inspired a rising of young people. I believe often they're called Generation Z. And at the funeral, which happened soon enough, they were chanting in Persian, Jin Jiyan Azadi. What does that mean? Good evening to you.
Yes, good evening. That's actually, they were chanting in Kurdish. So Gina's funeral was in Kurdistan, her home province. She's a Kurdish woman. And Jin Jiyan Azadi is a Kurdish slogan. And we've heard it adapted into Persian as the rallying cry during the 2022 uprising into Zan Zendegi Azadi. But Jin Jiyan Azadi, its roots are Kurdish. It comes from an imprisoned Kurdish leader named Abdullah Öcalan, who was a writer, an activist who was imprisoned. And the way that this slogan, which is deeply important, came to be was that Öcalan, his life was changed when he saw that his sister Hiwa, sister Hawa, was forced into a child marriage in exchange for money and wheat. And so that was a formative experience for him. And in 2010, he wrote an article called The Revolution is Woman. And he wrote that calling for freedom without gender equality is futile and illusory. And he presented his ideology on three axes: women's freedom, ecology, and attention to the environment and radical democracy. So his political writings all came together to create the foundation of Jin Jiyan Azadi, what we know now as woman life freedom.
Woman life freedom, that is the call to arms for this rising of people to protest in the street, the murder of a young woman in Tehran for no cause whatsoever, except we need to explain hair. What is the significance of hair to the police, to the regime? Why is it a need to control hair, and why is that qualify as a reason to murder somebody?
So, yes, the Islamic Republic has a very strict dress code, and it all harkens back to Islamic dress. So for women, that means covering one's hair in hijab, wearing a chador, something that isn't necessarily showing the confines and the contours of someone's body. And so what happened was that Mehsa Jina Amini, she was visiting Tehran. What we know is that she was stopped by the morality police for allegedly improperly wearing hijab. We don't have any photos of that. We don't know what that looked like. We don't know the interaction. But the next thing that we learned, and we learned this from a citizen journalist named Sajad Khoda Karami, is he let people know that this incident was unraveling, that a woman was severely beaten at the hands of the morality police. And then the next thing that we saw is an image of Gina after she was in custody of the morality police at the hospital. She is unconscious. When I talk about this image, I can see it in my mind. It is so visceral. She's laying there unconscious. Her face is puffy and bruised. You can see dried blood on her ears. There's tubes in her face. It was really shocking to see that. And when that image was shared, it incensed a population of people. It incensed people in Iran, people outside of Iran. And when she eventually succumbed to her injuries at Kasra Hospital, the journalist Niloufar Hamidis, who told us about what happened, she was at the hospital with their family. A protest started almost immediately, and they grew from there. Protests happened at her funeral in Kurdistan in Iran. This was reported by Alahi Mohammadi, another Iranian journalist. And so we really have everything to thank to Niloufar and Alahi for telling us what happened. They took great personal risk, and they were imprisoned and harassed and tortured and detained. And now they're both continuing to be journalists and reporting in Iran. But we really have everything to, we owe everything to these women. Without them, we would not have known what happened to Jina.
Your co-author, Fatima, did not go the first day to the protest, but eventually becomes the chronicler of the protest. Who is Fatima? Where was she at that moment, September of 22?
In September 2022, so Fatima and I had known each other for years. She's a journalist based in Iran. We met when she was in the U.S. and she was finishing one of her second master's, and she was studying at Northwestern. She happened to be coming through New York, and we met. And we met and we stayed in touch over many years. We had co-written a couple partially anonymous articles together because she was in Iran while we were writing these, and so we had to keep her identity safe. And then she told me in 2021, she was living abroad. She was working for BBC Persian in London, but her father fell sick from cancer. So she told me that I have to go back to Iran. You're not going to hear from me, because she knew she was going to be detained and harassed by interrogators as soon as she landed. If you don't hear from me, you'll know that I'm safe. So I didn't hear from her. And September 2022, while I was in the middle of working on a story for the New York Times, was the first time I got a correspondence from Fatima. And again, I just felt like the roller coaster, like tummy drop feeling, you know, this person that I hadn't heard from all of a sudden messaged me again in this moment. And she let me know that for the past year, since she had been in Iran, she was being interrogated. But she, you know, she told me this in the same breath as I've been going through interrogations, but I'm not scared. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for woman life freedom, for seeing you in Tehran. And this level of optimism was just so moving. And to have that combined with this being the first time that I heard from her again was really incredible. And so throughout this period, we kept in touch. She would send me pages of her experience, what she saw on the streets. While she was in Iran, she said, well, maybe this is crazy, but maybe we should write together. And I said, absolutely. And so we co-wrote another partially anonymous essay, this time for the Paris Review, together, kind of following the similar flow of us writing in and out of each other and kind of our experiences mirroring each other, one from inside and outside of the country.
Fatima is in Iran when these events are taking place. You are not. So we go to the other author, to Nilu Tabrizi. You were born in Tehran, and now you're working at the two major institutions of newspapers in the East Coast of the United States, the New York Times and Washington Post, now at the Post. How did you get there?
I always wanted to be a journalist. I used to wear a tape recorder. There's old family photos of this. I used to wear a tape recorder as a purse as a child, and I would interview people. And I would type up stories on a typewriter and send a family newsletter around when I'm 4, 5, 6, 7. This is really the only thing I ever wanted to do. And I don't come from a family of writers or journalists at all. And so this was very much just the path that I wanted for myself. And I really feel lucky to be able to actualize into that. I feel very grateful. But I never wanted to report on Iran because I was, you know, I don't come from a political family. We immigrated in the 90s to Canada. I was very fortunate to be able to go back and forth with ease to Iran because, again, my parents are just regular Iranian people. And so not at all in the political system. But when I moved to the U.S., I came here to go to journalism school for grad school at Columbia. This is the first time I started to meet Iranian Americans who had never been to Iran. You know, oh, my grandfather was an oil minister. My family is connected to the Communist Party. I started to meet people that, you would know, come from these political families. And so that almost made me want to guard that privilege of returning to Iran even tighter. I understood more what that meant, that if I started reporting on Iran, I could not return to my birth country. And so I did, and I reported on a variety of things. I covered race and policing, abortion access, drug policy, covered many things. But then when it was President Trump's first term, this was in 2017 when he enacted the travel ban, I was at the New York Times at this moment, and I looked around and saw that I was one of the only Iranian people. And the travel ban obviously really affected Iranians who were coming here as students, as fiancés on visas, and even green cards at the very beginning. And so I just really felt like it was my duty to report on my home country. This was a time that I could use my language skills because I grew up speaking Farsi with my family at home. The way that I can connect with people, I wanted to use that. I felt like this was the right moment, but I was very careful. You know, I connected with my friends who are journalists in Iran, and I asked them, well, what's the red line for you? You know, what gets you in trouble? Okay, so I'm going to report on sanctions. I'm going to report on this, but anything that is maybe reporting on corruption or anything that is a little bit more high profile, I'm, you know, a little bit too scared to report on that. And so this is kind of how I covered Iran. And then when the Ukrainian airliner incident happened in 2020. That was when a passenger airline was shot down by the Revolutionary Guard during a moment of really high tensions with Iran and the U.S. This was just after the U.S. had assassinated Soleimani. So tensions were really high. This plane was hit. There were many Iranian Canadians in that plane. Because our community is small, from a few degrees of separation, I knew people in that plane. And that felt like a moment in my reporting where it felt too close. And it felt like a moment that I had to step back and figure out how can I continue to report on Iran in a way that I can have separation for the integrity of the reporting and for my own mental health. So it's been a journey to figure out how to report on Iran. But so I stopped when the protests started in 2022. Immediately, they were anti-government. You know, some of the first slogans that we heard chanted by Iranians in September 22 was, you know, down with the system, calling for an end to the Islamic Republic. So I knew if I was going to report on this, I'd have to do it, you know, like I would any other story. And I needed to put away that fear. And by doing that, I need to put away my hopes and desires of returning to Iran in order to cover this in a meaningful and full way.
The book is For the Sun After Long Nights, the story of Iran's women-led uprising. Nilu Tabrizi and Fatima Jamapur are the authors. I'm John Batchelor.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.